listening to the Breakthrough Podcast. We hope you are encouraged by the message. Be sure to stick around for more at the end.
All right, guys, I'm excited. I'm really excited, really, really excited, because I've been super pumped about this study of James ever since I decided that this is the route that I thought the Lord was leading us in. And tonight is like one of my favorite chapters in the whole Bible. And it's not the whole chapter, but the first 12 verses what we're going to dive into and what we're going to break down. And it's really exciting. And last week in the podcast, I kind of gave a brief example, context and background of what the book of James is about. The book of James is written by Jesus' half-brother, James, and he was a Jewish man, and he was not a believer at first, but he later, after Jesus Christ revealed himself after the resurrection, became a believer, and he is writing this to the 12 tribes. We see in verse 1, the 12 tribes that are scattered in the dispersion. And what the dispersion was is basically these Jews that become Christians. They were being persecuted very heavily, and because of this, they were scattered throughout all the country and the region, that and different things like that. So therefore, because of this persecution, this dispersion, a lot of them lost their homes, a lot of them lost their families and money and various things like that. So it ended up to where these are very poor people that we're talking about here. These people that James is writing to is a very poor group of people. And in the first 12 verses, he has a message that he wants to get across. And tonight, as we dive into this, I want you to I'm going to give you a little saying, a little quote, and I want you to think on that. I want that to be kind of your quote as you go throughout this school year. Because as you go throughout this school year, you're going to face different things going on. It's going to be hard. Things are going to be, you know, you're going to face a lot of things. And it's hard to have a good attitude sometimes about it. It's hard to see the bigger picture sometimes. I want you to look at it this way. Outlook determines outcome, and attitude determines action. I want y'all to think on that. Outlook determines outcome, and attitude determines action. We see in verse 2, James tells us, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds." Notice that he used the word "when" there. That's the first thing we got to break out. He used "when." This lets me know that it's inevitable. You're going to face trials. It's not if you face trials, it's when. It's going to happen. Nobody said being a Christian meant you got out of trials, you got out of pain and hurt, and it doesn't happen that way. You're going to face trials, and it's just a matter of time. So it's unavoidable, it's inevitable, it's going to happen. So we have to realize that they're coming. The trials are coming. And not only does he say when they come, but he says trials and various kinds, as in plural. So not only are you going to face trials, it's going to be multiple trials. It's going to be, you know, more than you can probably handle sometimes. And actually in the Greek, the word that he uses there, it actually means to fall into. So it actually means you're walking along, you trip, and you get up, and you're surrounded by trials. That's the idea here. You're completely surrounded by trials. You're overwhelmed with trials. And you're going to find yourself. It says it's unavoidable. It's inevitable. When they come, they're going to come. But notice the action that he gives us. Notice the instruction he tells us to take when these trials come. He says, count it all joy. But if we're being realistic right here, that doesn't make a lot of sense to us. And in fact, after just reading one verse of James, James sounds like a complete nut job. He sounds like an idiot, just to be completely honest. Count it joy whenever trials come and when pain comes and when hurt comes. Count it joy. We can't really understand that. We can't really, really grasp that. It doesn't make a lot of sense to us. I mean, what normal person would be like, I got shot in the leg, I'm going to count it as joy? Nobody. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Who's gonna say, my boyfriend cheated on me, I'm gonna count it as joy. My girlfriend dumped me, I'm gonna count it as joy. I failed my test, my parents are gonna be completely crazy about it, I'll count it as joy. My parents are going through a tough time, count it as joy. One of my dear friends or family members lost their life in a car wreck, I count it as joy. One of my best friends broke his neck playing football, I count it as joy. Who really does that? If we think about it, let's think about what James is telling us to do here. He sounds completely crazy. He sounds like an idiot. He sounds like a nut job. He sounds like somebody that we wouldn't want to associate with because he probably needs to be locked in a mental institution because it just doesn't seem logical. But James has a point here, and he has something he wants to relay to us. And basically what I'm going to break down tonight is there's two different kinds of people that rejoice in pain. Two different kinds of people. The first person is the mentally insane. The people that are actually really crazy that think they're like George Washington or think that they're the Queen of England. Somebody like that. People like that, they rejoice in pain. They're like, oh, I cut my arm off. Yay. Those kind of people, there's people like that out there. That's not what I'm talking about here. That's the one kind of people. The other kind of people that rejoice in pain are people that know something. The people that know something. And people the person that knows something's better will come out of the pain in the long run. And that's two different kinds of people. So those kind of people that know something's better that's coming, it's kind of like weightlifting, weight training, that kind of thing. You're sitting there, and you got the curl bar, and you're going, and you're just pumping them out. You're pumping them out, and your muscles are on fire. They're burning. And you're like, oh, the burn feels good. No, the burn does not feel good. The burn hurts. But what you think feels good is the fact that you know because of that burn, in the long run, you're going to have these big muscles. You're going to have these chiseled, triceps. You're going to have this awesome body that you want here. And that's the idea behind the trial thing. Is you in weight training, you push yourself through whatever ridiculous exercise you're doing to harm your muscles, to break them down so they can be built back up stronger in the long run. And because you know that, you're willing to put your body through that pain. Because you know on the other side, there's bigger and better things to come out of it. So which person is James calling us to be tonight? Which one of those, which is he talking about here? Is James calling us to be delusional, crazy people that would cut their arm off and be happy about it? Or is he asking us, he's telling us to be these people that can rejoice because we know something is greater on the other side? Let's look on in verse 3. For you know, we know something. Crazy? Are there people that are crazy or people that know something? He tells you in verse 3, because you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness or endurance or perseverance. He's saying that you can rejoice in these things because you know that every locked in every trial, in every situation, there is a potential for you to have perseverance. There's potential for you to grow in your endurance and develop steadfastness. And in that potential, you can grow and you can develop. And every trial is pain. You're not going to go through a trial without pain, whether it be physical pain or emotional pain or mental pain or any other kind of pain I can't think of off the top of my head. You're going to go through some kind of pain, and there's two things that pain is designed to give in a trial. And that's the first thing is perseverance. Pain is designed to give you endurance. It's designed to give you, that's the way that works. And I heard a preacher talking about a book called Crazy for the Storm. And in this book, this is actually like a really cool book. I'm going to read it myself eventually, but this preacher was talking about it, I heard him the other day. In this book, it's about an 11-year-old boy. And this 11-year-old boy was on a flight with his family, and they're going through a blizzard and actually crash into a mountain, and everybody on the plane is dead. Everybody gets killed except for him. This 11-year-old boy, he survives. And the whole book is about how he marched down a mountain, hiked his way down the mountain at 11 years old through a blizzard and survived with no food, no nothing. He survived. And the reason he survived is throughout the book, he's breaking down the things that he's going back and talking about stories that his dad did to prepare him for this moment. He had like an adrenaline junkie dad. He had like a crazy, like adventure-seeking father. And his dad would like, when he was like 7, 8, 9 years old, would take him up to like the ski slopes, like the highest one, and just push him off and be like, have at it. And he would take him like into like the craziest like waves and say, teach him how to surf and be like, hey, go at it. You wipe out, start swimming. He put him in stressful situations and in tough situations only to make him more successful. So whenever he got to that moment in his life where he had to kick that in, he was able to survive. And he marched down a mountain at 11 years old in a blizzard. Stressful situations give you the ability to handle more and more stressful situations. It's the same way that education works. I know y'all are sitting there thinking, oh, education, I hate education. School started back, so it's a good analogy I'm using here. Your teachers know that you're not going to retain every single thing they tell you. You know, there's times you go home and you're like, I don't understand why I have to know this. I don't get it. Why do they put letters and numbers together? It makes no sense. No, my dad doesn't use this in his job. I don't understand why they're doing this. Stuff like that, they load you down, not because they expect you to learn all of it, not because they expect you to retain all of it. It's about perseverance. It's about endurance. What they're doing is they're loading you down to make you, your brain stressed, to make you stressed out, and make you, you know, so whenever you struggle through it, whenever you get through it, your brain will be able to endure more. You'll be able to persevere through tougher things. It's making you more rounded. It makes you a better person because of this. Just to give you an example, when you were like in kindergarten, first grade, when you're learning your letters, and they're like, all right, you got to write all your letters out before you can go to recess, and you're like, all 26? Are you kidding me? I got to write down 26 letters. Oh my, I got to write these 26 letters. I got to get them perfect, the little dotted line in the middle. If I don't have my things right, they're not going to let me go to recess. It's just killing me. Who do they think I am? I got to write 26 letters? You got to be kidding me. What's the problem? Well, then you get on into middle school and they're like, okay, I need a 2-page paper on George Washington. And you're like, what? 2 pages? Are you kidding me? Who do you think I am? I'm not a writer. I'm not going to be a writer for a living. Why are you giving me 2 pages? 2 pages? 2 pages? Are you kidding? Why? Then you get on into high school and they make you write essays and make you write like research papers and you're like, I can't take this. Do they think I'm going to be a scientist or something? They think I'm going to be I'm not Mark Twain here. I mean, I don't understand. I'm not a writer. I don't understand why you're making me do this research paper. It doesn't make a lot of sense. When you get on into college, they make you write some stupid, crazy stuff. I'm not going to lie to you. It's really, really dumb. But here's the thing. Think about it this way. If you never would have had to learn those 26 letters and write them out, your brain never would have been able to comprehend 2 pages. If you never would have learned how to write 2 pages and endure through that pain of having to write those 2 pages in middle school, you never would have been able to write an essay or a research paper or a book. If somebody's going to be a writer one day. That's the way it works. The same way trials work. Trials, God uses that and puts you through things and does these things to build up your endurance, to build it up so whenever you face bigger mountains and things like that, it's not so overwhelming because you can know that through the storm and through the trials that God is there with you. That's the idea behind education and behind these trials that I'm talking about here. So, Scott, are you saying that I should rejoice in my pain because I'm going to be able to endure more pain? That doesn't sound too fun either, actually, guys. I mean, think about it. What I'm kind of saying here is rejoice in me getting beat down so I can have the strength to take a bigger beating later on down the road. That doesn't sound too fun, Scott. And quite honestly, it doesn't. But that's not all that you're getting here. You're not getting just perseverance, just endurance, just steadfastness. That's not all you're getting out of this. That's not all pain brings you. That's just one of the things. And that's why we're not going to stop here, because there's times I've taught this in Bible studies before, and I stop right there. But I'm going to keep on going here, and it makes more sense when you keep going. James, verse 4, steadfastness, let steadfastness or perseverance have its full effect. Full effect. It says, let it have its full effect. So that indicates to me that you can go through a trial and not let it have its full effect. You cannot let perseverance and endurance take its full effect on you. That means you can go through pain and you can go through trials and you can go through struggles and not learn from it. That's why I told you that little quote, outlook determines outcome, attitude determines action. Look at your situation. What's your outlook on it? What's your attitude toward it? You can go through a trial and not learn from it. So you have to let steadfastness or let perseverance have its full effect. So it goes on to say, but it says, let steadfastness have its full effect that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing, aka mature. The Greek word for perfect means, like you see throughout the Bible, it says, be perfect as your Father is perfect. And be is the word perfect in Greek, it means mature, complete, lacking in nothing. It means to be mature. Let it grow you into maturity. And it says, let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. It will make you mature. In every trial, there's potential to grow you, potential to perfect you and make you more mature. And because of that, it makes you a better person, is what I'm saying. The trial will make you a better person in the long run. It'll make you more mature. It'll make you lacking in nothing. And the thing of it is, that's the kind of people we look up to. Our heroes, like superheroes and stuff like that, like our heroes that we idolize, you know, a lot of times it's people that have been through a really tough time, that have been through something crazy in their life, like that 11-year-old boy I was talking about. People like that, they go through something nuts. You're like, what? And they make it through it, and because they made it through it, they're stronger, and they're better, and they're more mature, and they're heroes in our eyes because they went through a hard time, and they was able to weather the storm, and they're better for it. So it makes you, pain can make you mature, but honestly, guys, that's not that impressive to our minds. Like, y'all are sitting there like, okay, I'm not sure. Okay, that sounds good. That doesn't excite us, really. What's pain maturing me for? Why am I being mature? What's the point of that? What joy can I have in that? What's the point? Because honestly, you're saying that my trial can make me a better person, Scott, but I'm going through some really tough stuff right now. I'm going through some hard stuff that I don't quite understand why I'm having to go through it. And honestly, it's not making me a better person, Scott. It's making me a bitter person. It's making me question God, and it's making me turn, you know, my thoughts against God. And I don't understand how this trial is making me better. And the reason for that is, guys, because we lack something. We lack something called wisdom. We lack something called wisdom. And that's where we're going here in verse 5. Any of you that lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously without a reproach, and it will be given to him. So pain is designed to give us stuff, like give us things, like perseverance, that kind of thing. But what's the one thing that we don't have that pain is designed to give us? Wisdom. That's why when you're in your situations that you're going through right now and you're questioning God and you don't understand why God would do this and why this and this and this thing, all this stuff is happening, it's because you lack the wisdom to understand why it's happening. Because ultimately, you know what wisdom is? Wisdom is the understanding of how reality works and the ability to navigate a given situation. So whatever situation you're going through, the reason you don't understand it is because you lack the wisdom to navigate that situation. And it makes you uncomfortable and you don't understand it. That's ultimately why. And the thing of it is, we don't have wisdom. We're not born with wisdom. I'm just letting you know that. We're born fools. A while back, this is back when like Stuart and them were in the state championship. I listened to a message and the guy used this study. He quoted Jerome Kagan, which is a scientist, and he was talking about children and their temperaments. And these temperaments that he's talking about, there's three different kinds of temperaments. And every single person in this room is born with one of these three temperaments. It's neurochemical. It's born into every single one of us. One of these three temperaments is embedded and entwined in our DNA. And the three temperaments are the anxious child, the aggressive child, and the philosophical child. And the way that these children would, the way these parents would find out which kind of child their children were, is the way you do it is you see how they respond to threats. That's what you put them in a situation, a threat, and however the child would respond to the threat indicated whether they were an anxious child, an aggressive child, or a philosophical child. And what they found was the anxious child runs away from all threats. Anxious child runs away from threats. The aggressive child runs towards threats. The aggressive child's like, I'm going to get it before it gets me. I'm not being taken alive, you know. And the philosophical child didn't even realize there was a threat. It was like, It didn't even realize that it was a threat at all. And that brought up the question, out of these three temperaments, which one is best? And they found out that none of these temperaments were best. None of them. None of them were best because it depended on what situation that you put the child in as to whether or not they succeeded or not. For instance, they found that the anxious child thrived in highly dangerous situations because whenever there was any kind of danger, the anxious child was like, uh-uh, and it ran that way. It was like, no, I'm not dealing with that. and they found that the aggressive child would thrive in moderately dangerous situations because sometimes the best way to handle a situation is to grab it by the horns. However, if you put that aggressive child in a highly dangerous situation, they're going to have fun running after whatever it is, but they're going to die really fast. You know, that's the ultimate, that's kind of the way it is. And then the philosophical child thrived best in the safe situations because they didn't care if it was a threat or not, and they just sat there. So they found out that if you put, you know, the philosophical child or the aggressive child in a dangerous situation, they would mess it up. If you put the anxious child in a safe situation, they would find a way to screw that up just because that's the way that they worked. And the thing of it is, what they found through this study was no temperament is wise. Because what is wisdom? Wisdom is the ability to understand a situation and navigate it well. None of the temperaments that you're born with are wise. You know what that means, guys? That means 2 out of 3 times, you're going to fail in the situation. Because you're going to respond wrongly. We were born with one response. And 2 out of 3, and that means we're only right 1 out of 3 times with our response. That means 2 out of 3 times we fail. So therefore, we're all fools, really. None of us were born with wisdom. However, wisdom can be taught. And that was the ultimate question for a lot of parents. You know, how do I make my child adapt to these situations and make them more well-rounded? And the answer is you put them in a situation to where they're uncomfortable and they don't know what to do and their response is the wrong response, and then you teach them the correct way to respond. And guys, that's what God does with us. He's a good father. He'll put us in a situation that we don't know what we're doing. We don't know what the response is. We want to run, but no, we don't know what the response is. We don't have the wisdom to navigate through the situation. We don't understand it. And what does it tell us to do? It says, any of you lack wisdom, ask God who gives generously, and he'll give it to you. He's saying whenever you're put in that situation and you don't know what to do, whenever you don't have that wisdom, ask me for it. I'll teach you how to handle the situation. I'll teach you how to navigate through this situation and this journey. Lean on me, and I will do that. So what is wisdom going to give me, Scott? What's the point of getting wisdom? And I got 3 quick things. I'm going to be done. I'm not going to keep y'all much longer. 3 quick things. In the midst of pain and trials, in the midst of pain, wisdom will keep you from putting hope in things that will fade. That's what wisdom, it'll keep you from putting hope in things that will fade. We like to because when everything's going good, guys, when there's no problems in our lives, no struggles and no trials, and everything's going smooth, we kind of put God on the back burner most of the time. You ever notice that? A lot of times, the only time they talk to God is when something's going wrong. It's very common with all of us. But everything's going good, so what do? We put our attention and our focus and our significance in things like alcohol and money and sex and drugs and pornography and different things like that and lust and all these things. That we put our significance in these material things. And see, in verse 10 and 11, this is what he's talking about. He tells the rich man to exalt in his humiliation because like a flower of the grass, he will fade away. Guys, there's nothing in this world materialistically that's going to last. It's all going to fade away. It's all going to just die out. And that's what James is telling, you know, the rich man here and these people here that the rich man likes to hold on to his money and hold on to these material things, but what he doesn't realize is that's all going to fade away. But you need to put your hope and put your faith and put your significance in something much greater, something that's already overcame the grave, something that will not fade out, something that will last you for eternity. So pain gives us wisdom to put our significance in something that won't fade away. The second thing that wisdom teaches us is that pain is real, but it's temporary. Pain is real, but it's temporary. And we can rejoice in pain because we know it won't last. And that's what he's talking about in verse 9. It's about let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. He is saying, when life gets tough, that's okay. Life's going to get tough. It's all right. Because it's not going to last. When times get hard, when the pain hits you, it's okay. Because it's not going to last. And that's ultimately, that's the rejoice we have to have, guys. Because in verse 12, it talks about, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. Guys, that lets us know that those who remain steadfast under the trial, for when he has stood the test, that means the test will end. Whenever you go through the pain and the pain is over, you're going to be granted the crown of life. Think about it this way, guys. Ultimately, we can't really comprehend this, but this entire life we have compared to eternity in heaven is pain. This entire life is nothing compared to what we're going to have one day. This entire life, although a lifetime seems really long, compared to eternity, it's very short. This life is temporary. This life is a very short thing. And just like that, our lives are very short things compared to eternity. Your pain you're going through is a very short-term thing that will, whenever you get through it, when you stand that test, you're going to have the crown of life. And it's just like pain's temporary, just like the weight training thing I used to earlier. You know it hurts. It hurts really bad, but you know that pain will go away and it'll produce a better result that you desire later on. So whatever you're going through, it's temporary, guys. And you're going to be able to rejoice in that pain because you know that there's a greater end. And the last thing that pain is designed to give you is, the pain and wisdom is designed to give you is, it will turn your head upward. You know, I said a while ago, it seems like the only time people turn to God is when they're going through things. Pain and struggle and wisdom, and when you get that wisdom, it'll turn your head upward. You'll realize, I'm holding on to this, and it's going to fade away. I'm holding on to this addiction of mine, and I think that it's what I want. I think it's what's going to sustain me through my hard times. But it's going to fade away. And ultimately, when you realize that, it'll turn your head upward. I'm going to share a quick story with y'all about my personal life. And before we dismiss, well, my sophomore year of college, I was put in a situation that was very tough. It was a very hard situation. It was very, it was a trial that to this day is the biggest trial of my life, I would probably say. It was the hardest time I had. Basically, you know, long story short, my dad lost his job, and him and my mom were having problems, and he wound up leaving. And because he lost his job, and because his job supplies were the house, we were left homeless. My mom had a bad car wreck, and she had deflated one of her lungs and broke her sternum, and she couldn't work. She was bedridden. And my sister was 14, something like that. I can't even remember. It was a while back. And basically, you know, I was off at East Central playing baseball, and basically what ultimately had to happen is I had to get a job because we didn't have a house, and we didn't have any money because my mom couldn't work and my dad wasn't there. And it put us at the point where we were a homeless family with me working a part-time job at Hibbett Sports. That's what it ended up being. And thank God I have some really great people in my life that wound up giving us a house, letting us stay at their guest house, and it worked its way out. It worked itself out that way. But during this trial, during this time, I had to be really strong. For my mom and for my sister, I had to be really strong. It because you know, Anna, she was just she didn't know what was really going on. My mom was sick. She was you know, hurting. She couldn't do nothing. And I had to be the man. I had to step it up. I was out living it up, partying at East Central, having a good time. You know, living it up. You know, the YOLO lifestyle. That's what I was all about. But I had to grow up, and I had to become a man, and I had to be the man of the house, and I had to be strong for my little sister and my mom. But while I was strong for them, I wasn't strong for myself because I would go to alcohol to be my way out. I had to be strong for Anna and my mom. But at the same time, whenever they would go to bed or whenever, you know, I was away from them, I would be getting hammered, drunk. I'd be abusing alcohol because I thought that that would sustain me. I thought that that was, you know, no matter how hard it got, no matter how tough it got, alcohol was my way out. I had fun, you know, I'd get drunk and I'd forget about some things. And it was my way of kind of not being in the situation. And I abused it. And it ultimately, you know, and that alcohol thing is kind of one of the things I talked about. Pain and wisdom will let you realize you're holding on to things that will fade away. I was doing that. I was holding on to something that would just fade away. And ultimately, alcohol took me to a place, and it was New Year's Eve one year. I went out to a party, and everything had come to a head. It was just like everything was just bearing down on me. I couldn't take anymore. I was sick of everything. And subliminally, I never said this out loud. I never said it to myself. But subliminally, I think I had decided that I was going to end my life because I bought way more alcohol than my little body should have been able to take, and I drank way more alcohol than my body should have been able to take. And it got to the point where I had to be rushed to the hospital. Had my stomach pumped. I almost died. It was pretty bad. And it was all because I thought that that was the best way. I thought that that would get me through my pain. I thought that would get me through my trial. That, you know, eventually I would drink my way until I made it through and I'd be all right. I would numb myself to the pain that I was feeling, and it would all work out in the end. But that ain't what happened, guys. I almost killed myself. I was holding on to something that would just fade away. And I got my job at Hibbett Sports, and I was doing that. And all this, you know, I started meeting new people. I started, you know, one of the guys I worked with, me and him both realized about the same time that this drinking thing and that's the thing, guys. After I did that with my drinking, I didn't quit. I kept going. I kept drinking. That was just, oh, I drink a little too much. I just won't drink that much next time. That's the way I looked at it. But I met this guy, and we both drank and that kind of thing, and we decided together, you know, we both grew up in church, that kind of thing, and we'd talk about here and there, and we both decided that what we were chasing wasn't worth it chasing, and we both decided that we would start holding ourselves accountable. You know, I used to have a foul mouth, and he did too, and we'd put rubber bands on our hands, on our wrist, and every time one of us said a cuss word, we'd pop the other one, just, you know, that kind of thing, and although that's a little bit light, an insignificant thing, that's what started my walk back to Christ. Meeting that guy that just, you know, said, "Hey, let's turn our lives around." Let's and slowly but surely, you know, relationships started growing. I wound up meeting Trevor and Tyler, the guys that play in our band, because of Hibbett Sports, and because of all this situation. I wound up meeting them. They wound up challenging me on my walk like I never thought I'd be challenged before, which ultimately led me to being called into the ministry by God. Which ultimately led me to this stage tonight, which ultimately led me to talking to you. So, moral of that story is, if my dad never made those bad decisions that he did back, and by the way, me and my dad are fine now. We reconciled that. It's all good. It's been made right. But if my dad never would have made those stupid bad decisions back then, it never would have led me to Hibbett Sports. It never would have led me to the place where I realized that I had to stop looking around, I had to look up, and it never would have led me to Edify. It never would have led me to this stage in youth ministry. It never would have led me to this night where I'm speaking to you about your trials and your circumstances. I'm here to tell you, you can rejoice in the crap that you're going through. And the junk and just the mess that you're going through, you can rejoice in it because I promise you, you have a Father in heaven that loves you, and He knows exactly what you're going through, and He knows exactly what waits on the other side. And He knows that through this, you'll be strengthened. He knows you'll become a better person in the long run because of this trial. Let perseverance and steadfastness have its full effect. And guys, we all establish we lack the wisdom. Cry out to God, asking Him for that wisdom, how to navigate the situation. Because guys, ultimately, our God is sovereign. He has it right in his hands. He has you in the palm of his hand. And he's saying, hold out. Hold out a little longer. Let me help you. Lean on me. And you'll make it in the end. That's why you can rejoice in your trials. Let us pray. Dear Father, I just thank you for tonight. I thank you for the blessings that you give us. God, I pray that right now, God, you know the hearts that are hurting. You know the pain that is swelling up inside of each and every one of these students. God, I pray that right now that they release that pain to you. They realize that what they're going through, the trial and the circumstance that they're facing, they don't understand it. But God, I pray that they're so convicted right now, God, that they haven't been leaning on you, that they come running to your arms right now. They come running to your arms and they say, I don't understand, God, but I know that you know what's best for me. God, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust you because you got it all under control. God, I know a lot of times it's like when we're children with our own parents and we face a tough time or we don't get our way. We don't understand the situation, so we pitch a fit and we get mad and we beat on things and we rebel against our parents when we're little and that kind of thing. And that's the same thing when we go through these trials and these struggles. We know that we beat on your chest and we get mad and we get mad at you and we turn our back on you and we pitch a fit and we pout. But ultimately, you're still there, just like our parents were. You're still there and you're loving and you say, you know what? I know what's best for you. And you're willing to slap our hand away from the cookie jar when we're reaching for something we don't need. And I thank you for that. God, I ask right now, Lord, that you just work. You do what you do and you just move and you just work and you just convict and you just provide the peace to us tonight that we know that through our trials, we can count it as joy. We can rejoice through our pain because we know when it's all said and done, we will receive the crown of life. In your name I pray. Amen.
On Breakthrough Ministries, follow us on Twitter at BreakthroughMI or visit our blog at www.breakthroughministry.wordpress.com.
Hey guys, this is Scott. What a weekend and what a week we had this past week here at Breakthrough. Just so many, you know, awesome experiences with God this week. It all started Friday night with our back to school event. Rich Miller came and presented the word, and it was just the Spirit of God just moved throughout the room, and it was just an awesome experience. It was so exciting to get to see the kids worship, and then Saturday, it bled on into Saturday, and we got to worship and have fun and have a good time Saturday, and then Sunday, we got to go and do some things. It was just a really awesome experience all weekend long, and it just bled on into last night's worship service, and it was just a great, exciting time. And it's really exciting for me this time of year because something you notice about the kids is that as they go back to school, they sit in those classrooms all day and they get wound up. And whenever they get here, they're just like so energetic and enthused. And some people look at that as, oh, you can't control them then. But I look at it in a good way because they're energized. They're glad to be here. They're socializing with their friends. They're having a good time. And it's all in the name of Jesus Christ. And that's the awesome thing about it, is they come to worship Jesus Christ, and they're energized. And it's fun when they're energized. Who really wants a bunch of teenagers that are just kind of dull? I mean, I don't really want that. I like to see them. They have energy, and they definitely let it go. Last night after the service, they were out there playing football and doing all different kind of stuff after we got through. But just an awesome service last night. The Lord just moved, and I was so excited to start this study because I knew it was going to be a chance for us to really dive in and just tear down some walls. And those walls are these trials that we go through and different various things that we face, that ultimately we're so immature in our faith that we don't know how to handle it. We don't have the wisdom to guide ourselves through these situations. So I was really excited about getting this
the study started, and it was just a great, you know, opportunity, and God really moved. God answered prayers last night. We had a few that the message really hit, and that's exciting. That's exciting to see that, that God's word, when it goes out there, that somebody receives it and accepts it and really uses it and begins to analyze their own life with it. And that's the awesome thing. And I can't wait for this coming week just to go right back into the book of James. But that's just kind of what's been going on here. A breakthrough the past week. It's been kind of crazy. It's been kind of chaotic, and I've been kind of wore out. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep this past weekend getting everything planned. But, you know, it's just really exciting right now. And for those of you who have been to our breakthrough services, they start at 6:45. And during the school year, like starting this past Wednesday night and continuing throughout the rest of the school year, we'll be feeding at 6:15. Any of the kids that want to come and eat, we'll have food for them. And as part of our ministry here is we feed before at 6:15, and then at 6:45 we come in for worship. And if you don't know where we're located, or you want to know more about us, if you know somebody that goes to Breakthrough, you know, ask them about it. Ask them about, you know, the service. Ask them about how to get to the church. Ask different various things like that. And we're glad to have you. You know, we're always looking to grow, and we're always looking to minister, and that's ultimately what we are here to do, and that's to minister and to grow as Christians, and to grow the body of Christ and the bride of Christ. And I pray that this year, you know, is different than the years past, because I know whenever, you know, when you're in high school and school starts back, it gets really hard, because you're faced with trials and you're faced with temptations, and you got all these things that are just building up, and it gets tough. It gets really tough, and it's very easy to just go through the motions of church and then act out on your situation and grab those things that will fade away. And, you know, my prayer for this year, for my group of students that I have this year, my core students, my student staff that I have that leads worship and leads small groups and things like that, I pray that this year, as well as all my kids, but I pray that they have that passion, that desire, that it doesn't matter what people say about you at school. It doesn't matter what they think. It doesn't matter any of that, really. It all boils down to serving the kingdom, you know, building the kingdom. And I want them to be fearless. In order for them to be fearless, they have to be mature in their faith. And that's why I'm so excited about this study, because ultimately this study is a study to grow you spiritually. It's a study that addresses spiritual immaturity. And if you can look at that in an honest way, and you analyze your own life with it, you realize that really, truthfully, you're very immature in your faith. And it encourages you to ask God to grow you. And that's what I want for my students. I want them to be these, you know, on fire, passionate, you know, just crazy Jesus freaks, so to speak, that don't care about not being the coolest, they don't care about not being the most popular, but they care about loving the least of these, you know, going out to those kids that are struggling with things, and going, you know, to the kids that have broken homes, and the kids that don't have friends, the kids that don't wear the nicest clothes, the kids that sit by themselves at lunch, the kids that nobody will talk to, you know, in the hallways. And I pray that they see those kids and they get convicted and heartbroken, because, you know, they realize that it's their job to love everyone and to go out and share the name of Jesus Christ with all. And that's what I pray that this year they take a stand for Christ like they never took a stand before, and they start a revolution. They start, you know, something different. They become revolutionaries and rebels in their schools, to the point where it starts a movement throughout Winston County and on into surrounding counties, and it just changes the atmosphere of the young people. Because I fully believe that there's a group of young people that are coming up, this generation that's coming up, while there are some terrible things going on, there's a small group that are really on fire for Christ, and they're really looking to set the world on fire. And I pray each and every day that you know, they'll be the spark that starts it in Winston County. they'll be the spark that starts it at Winston Academy and at Louisville and at Nanawaya and at Noxipater. And I just pray that this year they just realize that, you know, it's all going to fade away one day. The popularity, the party lifestyle, the fun of sin, all these things, it's going to fade away and it's going to drop you right at the doorstep of death. But Christ will give you the crown of life, and it'll be for an eternity. And that's worth way more than a popularity vote. It's worth way more than being that cool kid. And I pray that they realize that and that they will go into their schools and they will turn their schools completely upside down and stir some things up. That's my prayer. But like I said, we're going to be back in James next week. I was going to do a 10-week series, and then I realized that it's a lot of stuff to cover. And I just, you know, I was going to cover the first, like, 18 verses in the first message, and then I realized that that was impossible. It wasn't going to happen. So it may be a little longer. I'm not really going to put a guideline on it. I'm going to kind of go how I feel, you know, the Spirit leads and that kind of thing. But I'm going to be starting in verse 13 next week, hopefully, and we'll be diving into that and finishing up the first part of chapter 1 next week. And really looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. You know, if you ain't never been before, ask somebody how to get here or where we're located or what time, you can write us on Twitter at our handle there. You can write us on our blog. Whatever the case may be, get in touch with us. You can call, you know, the church office up here. Find out a time. We want you here. We want to see you in the seat. We want to be able to minister to you and talk with you and establish a relationship with you. Not to boost numbers or pad stats. That's not what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned with just all the lost people that are out there. All the people that church is not really a priority. All the people in the community that really just don't actually know who Jesus, they know who Jesus Christ is, but they don't really know what he did. They just know that he's a figure in history. And they don't know the significance of his time on this earth and his time in history. And I pray that you would be, you know, lights in this world. I pray that you would go out and you would just show people who Christ is, because there's a lot of lost people around there. There's a lot of lost people in this world. And it's our job to be priests and disciples and go out and spread the name of Jesus Christ. I'll see y'all next week. Y'all have a good one. God bless you.